It's the first of the month and rent is due. But many thousands in Florida can't pay and they're scared of eviction. Good morning. We're live from Studio 5. I'm Melissa Ross and this is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening. Just ahead, Florida's eviction crisis and how you can get help. Let us know if you're having trouble paying the rent out there. Give us a call. It's 549-2937. Then later, a conversation with St. Augustine author Thomas Hischek. Plus, the local arts group Don't Miss a Beat, how they're reaching out to kids in this time of pandemic. Speaking of which, here's the latest on the COVID crisis by the numbers. 623,471 cases of COVID in Florida and just over 11,000 deaths. We need to note that while statewide totals show fewer new cases, they are also showing a sharp decrease in the number of tests for the virus, so we may not be getting a really clear picture of this. Here in Northeast Florida, there are 448 deaths now recorded from COVID-19. And in addition to widespread illness and death, the pandemic has left millions jobless and at risk of being homeless, too. It is the first of the month today, and of course, that means the rent is due. The global research firm Stout predicts that 749,000 Florida households, that's nearly half of all rental units in this state, are at risk of eviction over the next 4 months. Now, Governor Ron DeSantis did extend his executive order in regard to the moratorium on evictions that's been in place. So that moratorium is good for all of September. Yet another last-minute reprieve for all of those tenants out there. But in spite of that, the eviction crisis in Florida is real. We are starting the hour with a closer look at this as September begins. We're pleased to welcome Mary DeVries. She's Division Chief of the Housing Unit with Jacksonville Area Legal Aid. Mary, thanks for being with us.
Good morning, Melissa.
And if you're worried about eviction, you can't pay the rent or mortgage, give us a call. It's 549-2937. Emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax, and our Facebook page is open. So once again, Mary, at the last minute, the governor extended the statewide moratorium on evictions and foreclosures. He did this last night. He's been doing this at the end of each month since the pandemic began in March. What does this mean for the thousands across the state who are at risk of eviction?
Well, it's certainly welcome news that the moratorium has been extended, but tenants should note that the executive order that was issued for August was a little different from the prior versions of the moratorium in that starting in August, the order put the burden on the tenant to raise with the court the protections in the executive order. Past versions of the order had really stopped evictions from even being filed, but since August, landlords have been able to file eviction lawsuits against tenants, and it's only that last step, the final action on the lawsuit, that is suspended until October 1st, if and only if the tenant can show a link to COVID-19 as a reason for not being able to pay the rent.
So you have to be able to prove that you are unable to pay your rent because of the pandemic, that you've lost your job because of it. And if not, you will be going down the path of eviction, even if it's not happening immediately. Is that right?
What's important for tenants to understand is that if they're served with a lawsuit, they only have 5 business days to respond to the lawsuit. If their non-payment's not related to COVID-19, a tenant would still have the regular defenses that they may have to an eviction lawsuit, but if the non-payment is not due to that loss of income due to COVID-19, then the tenant may get a judgment against them and the sheriff may be able to evict them during the month of September.
So are evictions happening then around Florida even though this moratorium is in place?
Yes. For the most part, earlier during the pandemic, most local courts had restrictions on carrying out evictions, but starting in July, evictions did start in many localities, and then starting in August, especially in Northeast Florida, evictions have been going forward.
And what are you hearing from people who are out on the street? What are some stories you're hearing? Yeah.
Well, certainly we're being contacted by more people that are being sued. From the months of April through July, there were only about 50 eviction lawsuits being filed a month. In the month of August in Duval County, there were 800 evictions filed alone. What we're hearing from tenants is for those who have been able to return to work, they're still having a hard time coming up with enough money to catch up. And then we're also hearing from tenants who either lost their job and haven't been able to find a new job or have not went back to work yet.
Let's talk about that, too, because this has been the case since April. Even though there's been a moratorium on evictions in Florida since April, that does not absolve you, if you're a tenant, of your responsibility to pay all of the rent that you missed. You're expected to make arrangements with your landlord to pay it back. That's going to be pretty difficult for the average worker, isn't it?
I would say yes, it's very difficult. I mean, we're working with some tenants who have been able to receive small amounts of assistance from various agencies, but the bulk of the debt is still money that they're going to have to pay back. And the rents are have been increasing over time. I mean, the a tenant in Duval rent may be anywhere from, you know, $800, $900, $1,000, $1,100 a month. Over a period of 4 or 5 months, we're seeing tenants with debts of $4,000, $5,000, $6,000, $7,000. Not many folks could come up with that money if they've been out of work for several weeks or months.
If you're just tuning in, we're speaking with Mary DeVries, who heads up the housing unit with Jacksonville Area Legal Aid. Are you a tenant who can't pay your rent? Are you worried about foreclosure because you can't pay your mortgage? Let us know your story out there. We'll go to your calls in a few minutes, 549-2937, to join us. And we'll go to your tweets in a moment, too, here on First Coast Connect. Now, Mary, we'll say this again at the end of your segment, but let's talk about what Jacksonville Area Legal Aid is doing. You have created an online tool, a website, to help people who are at risk of eviction. The website is floridaevictionhelp.org. Can you tell us about it?
Sure. The form builder is a guided interview that walks a tenant through a series of questions. And at the end of the interview, it generates a response to an eviction lawsuit that the tenant can file in court. And the form builder includes defenses related to COVID-19, so the governor's limited extension of the moratorium, as well as some defenses that may still be available under the CARES Act.
Okay. And, you know, this is interesting, too, because I think that there are so many Floridians who will be able to benefit from your website. A study that was just released yesterday at the University of South Florida found that 1/3 of Floridians have less than $1,000 on hand to cover an emergency. And a big chunk of that group has no money, no savings at all. And so the average person just doesn't have any money put aside to pay back rent, to pay a lawyer if they're fighting eviction. If they reach out to legal aid, do they have to pay for your legal services?
No, all our services are free. If a family qualifies for our services, we provide several different services related to eviction. We provide advice. In some cases, we provide representation. We also host a weekly eviction defense clinic. It's being held virtually by appointment. Tenants who are eligible for the clinic can meet with a lawyer, get advice, get assistance preparing a response to an eviction lawsuit that the tenant can file with the court.
Let's go to some calls now for legal aid. Their new website is floridaevictionhelp.org. Are you in trouble out there? Are you having trouble paying rent? Are you worried about eviction? There is a moratorium once again this month for those who cannot pay if you can prove you're unemployed due to the pandemic. But we want your questions. Let's go to some calls. It's 549-2937. Jimmy on the West Side. Hi, Jimmy. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. I just have a question about the website with the guided interviews. are there kiosks or ways that people who don't have computer access at home, or, you know, or even safe computer access, you know, in another building, how can people without access get this help?
Okay, thanks for that. A good point, Mary DeVries over at Legal Aid, because the digital divide is real. Not everyone has internet access, or maybe they had it and they stopped paying that bill too. So how can people access this help if they're not online?
If they're not online, you know, in some areas, libraries have started to reopen, but not in all locations. We would encourage tenants to reach out to a family member or a friend who may have internet access to try to access the form builder. It can be accessed through your phone, although the screens would be fairly small. So I agree that access to internet is a huge problem for low-income tenants. And so if they can rely on family members or friends for that access, that may be an option.
That's good advice. John tweets the show, I am disappointed in the timing of these last-minute extensions. Another listener tweets, the city needs a relief program specifically and exclusively for rent and mortgages, with checks issued jointly to the renter and the landlord or mortgage holder. The city has done some relief in this crisis, Mary, but what are your thoughts about what cities like Jacksonville and the state of Florida perhaps should be doing to take a more comprehensive look at this? The governor has sort of been waiting until the end of each month, and then at the last minute, he extends the moratorium again because so many people are at risk. But is a different approach maybe needed here?
Well, the earlier versions of the moratorium were successful in that they helped prevent many families from becoming homeless during the height of all of the closures. But and though there has been some financial assistance available through the city and through other community organizations, it really hasn't been enough to assist families so that they can avoid eviction later. These families are still going to be homeless next month if there's not more financial assistance brought to bear. Some of the local programs have been offering, you know, $1,000, $1,500, and while that's not a small amount of money for a tenant who's been out of work for longer than a month, that type of assistance is not going to go farther. So I think there needs to be more rental assistance that's made available. And tenants may also need the assistance of the court or other agencies in trying to get their landlord to agree to work with these programs so that assistance can be received.
Now, of course, the big emphasis is on tenants who are vulnerable in this crisis, but what about landlords? We sometimes hear, when we talk about this issue, from landlords who say, please don't paint us as these evil slumlords cruelly collecting rent from tenants who cannot pay. We are hurting in this crisis, too. What about that part of the story?
Well, I think that's a fair, you know, I think that's a, there are landlords who are struggling to pay their bills. Landlords who have federally backed mortgages, there may be programs or assistance available where they can enter into forbearance agreements. If it's a small business, there may be some sources of assistance out there for landlords. And so our goal is not, and none of the moratoriums stop tenants from owing the rent. The goal is, can we find a way where the tenant is able to receive assistance such that the landlord is made whole and the tenant gets back on track? I mean, that's where the solution lies, where both the tenant is able to pay and the landlord gets the income that they are due.
Mm-hmm. If you're just tuning in, we're speaking with Mary DeVries of Jack's Area Legal Aid. It's the first of the month. Rent is due. And if you are worried about eviction, there is help out there. Let's go back to FloridaEvictionHelp.org. This is the tool you've created. You just put this up, it's my understanding. How much traffic are you seeing? How much demand out there are you noticing for people needing assistance right now?
The form builder, it started out as a tool that we were using in our eviction defense clinic, and starting back in March, when the crisis started and the closures began, we made a decision to adapt the tools so that it would be available for tenants facing eviction, knowing that we were unlikely to be able to serve the number of people who would be contacting our office for help. We have made the tool available statewide. We've informed other legal aides across the state that it's available. And certainly in Duval and also in Miami, we've seen quite a bit of traffic for using the tool.
Quite a bit of traffic. It's 549-2937. We want to hear from you. Are you a tenant or maybe you're a landlord? What are your thoughts about the eviction moratorium extended once again for an entire month? So you will not be kicked out if you cannot pay your rent, if you can prove that you are unemployed due to the COVID pandemic. It's 549-2937 to join the show. Let's go to Carolyn in Jacks Beach.
Hey,
hi, Carolyn. Carolyn, you're on the air. Yes. Carolyn, go ahead.
I'm 72. I paid off my mortgage years ago. My roommate left due to the coronavirus and her family. So I don't have anybody helping me pay my bills now. I don't have a mortgage, so there's no forbearance. Is there anything for a good saver like me who's always been frugal?
You mean financial assistance, but not related to evictions, right?
Right, because I didn't evict her. She left because her family needed her to help with the virus.
And so you're having trouble paying your bills because you don't have her paying, you know, rent to you anymore? Is that where you are?
Yes.
Okay. Carolyn, I'm sorry to hear that. And I know your story's not uncommon, and I appreciate the call. So Mary over at Legal Aid, that's Carolyn in Jacks Beach, doesn't have a mortgage to pay, luckily, anymore. But she's like so many people in this crisis, in this pandemic, she's struggling financially. And, there are some relief programs out there, although I don't know which one specifically to recommend to her right at this second.
Yeah, I'm not sure either. She could reach out to Elder Source, which is an organization that works with individuals over the age of 60. They may have they may be able to direct her to some resources. She may also want to contact the United Way at 211. The United Way is really the local organization that knows who's out there that can provide assistance, and they would probably have the best, idea of what agency might be able to assist her.
Yeah, that is the best, Carolyn, if you're still listening. Thank you for reminding me of that, Mary. And for people out there listening right now who are having a hard time, whatever your situation, yeah, start there with a call to 211, the United Way, and see how that proceeds. I know that you deal with a number of people needing low or no cost legal help, Mary, but has this taken precedence over everything else that's going on at the legal aid office right now, this eviction situation?
Well, certainly we've had an increased request for assistance, but when we've looked at the numbers for individuals contacting our office, just generally from February to July, we saw a 75% jump in the number of people asking for assistance with our office for legal help. So that could be victims of domestic violence seeking assistance on a family law matter, individuals needing assistance with an immigration matter. We have a consumer unit that does a lot of work with consumers having, issues relating to their mortgage or to credit card debt. So just in general, during the pandemic, we've seen an increase in services, an increase for requests for services, not just on evictions, but really in all the types of legal matters that we assist with.
All right. Let's see here. Tom on the West Side. Hi, Tom. Good morning.
Hi, good morning to you, too. I was just going to say, it's not just renters that face a hard situation at this point in time. Homeowners, too, because I was laid off a little bit before the COVID crisis. And I'm an owner, and now I'm behind on property tax. And so I could wind up homeless.
I'm sorry to hear that, Tom. Thanks for calling. What about that kind of story, Mary? Someone like him.
Well, I think he's right. Homeowners who have lost income are also struggling to get caught up. And we've seen a fair amount of people who got behind on the rent right before the pandemic. So something happened in January and February, and the pandemic only made things worse because they weren't able to find a job, and really the problems have escalated. For homeowners that have a mortgage that are unable to pay, our office suggests, you know, primarily that individuals reach out to their mortgage company, see if there are any options for that homeowner when they've faced a difficulty due to the pandemic.
Eric on the South Side. Hi, Eric. Good morning. Go ahead.
Good morning, Melissa. How are you doing?
All right. Thanks.
Thanks for your focus on timely topics.
Sure. So what's your situation?
The elephant in the room, though, Melissa, is that there's plenty of money. There's tens of millions of dollars floating around. These distressed renters and landlords, they should call Shad Khan. He paid his last quarterback $20 million, Nick
right.
Foles.
Right.
And he lasted a year, $20 million. Thank you, Melissa.
Thank you. And yes, income inequality is a real thing. Absolutely right there, Eric. Okay. Mary, again, the website is floridaevictionhelp.org. Any other tips out there for people listening?
I think, you know, for those tenants that have been sued, yes, go to our website, call our office to request assistance, call the United Way at 211 to see if there's any financial assistance out there.
Thank you so much. Again, it's Legal Aid's free tool for anyone at risk of eviction, struggling to pay rent. It's floridaevictionhelp.org, and she's Mary DeVries, Division Chief, Housing Unit with Jacksonville Area Legal Aid. Thanks, Mary.
Thank you, Melissa.
Much more still ahead. Later, we spotlight the local arts organization Don't Miss a Beat, plus how One Call is helping people in this pandemic with a special program. But up next...
It is still a mystery of why some shows succeed in one city and fail in the other.
Author Thomas Hischek on musicals and the different tastes across the pond will explain next.
Turntable Tuesday can now be heard on Anthology on the WJCT app and 89.9 HD3. For the best on vinyl, listen to Anthology Tuesdays at 9. Turntable Tuesday, part of the Jacksonville Music Experience.
Actor Billy Porter lived through the HIV/AIDS crisis in the 80s, and he says the words of wisdom he learned back then could help with the times we're living through right now.
Love always wins. Mm. Love always wins. Mm. That's it.
Co-star Billy Porter on Love, Race, Church, and an Emmy nomination. Next time on It's Been a Minute from NPR.
Saturday at noon here on WJCT News 89.9.
I'm Marco Werman. PRI's The World brings you more than just a day's news.
Well, the poor old British pub has been around for 2,000 years.
We introduce you to people around the globe.
I'm a Liberian, but I'm part of Africa.
If we were only in Argentina.
I think it's a Scottish thing, you know? This sense of doom there, but it's always kind of amusing to us.
Join us and hear The World. Weekday afternoons at 3 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. If you love Broadway musicals, chances are you're looking forward to live theater at some point this year. And it's likely you've seen hit shows that have played to packed houses here in the U.S. and have also run overseas. But it turns out what plays well in London's West End doesn't always translate over here, and vice versa. Local author and Flagler professor Thomas Hischak is out with his 30th book, The Mikado to Matilda, British Musicals on the New York Stage. And he covers everything from the Gilbert and Sullivan era to the Andrew Lloyd Webber mega musicals of the 80s and recent hits like Billy Elliot, Matilda, and more. And he looks at why some shows do better here than others. Let's listen. Thomas Hischak, good to talk to you. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
It's interesting to read a book like this right now, particularly since we all miss going to shows, going to plays because of the pandemic. And as we look forward to that day when we can take in more live theater, what prompted you to delve into this topic where you look at how British plays and West End theater, which is so wonderful, how it sort of fares when it crosses the Atlantic and comes to the United States? What drew you to this topic?
I've always been familiar with the famous British plays, and most people are, all the Andrew Lloyd Webber musicals, and even back in the 60s, the Anthony Newley musicals and musicals like Oliver. And so I was always aware of British musicals on the New York stage. But in 2012, a book came out in England by a man named Adrian Wright, and he called it West End Broadway. And it was a book about the Broadway musicals that went to London and how they fared. And I thought, well, there should be a book about the London musicals that came to Broadway and how they fared, and which, you know, succeeded, which did not, because it is still a mystery of why some shows succeed in one city and fail in the other, the same show, mm-hmm. you know, and the idea that American audiences, theater-going audiences, and British West End is their version of Broadway, that same things do not appeal to them. And it's still going on today. It's not like television and the Internet has made us all the same audience. There are certain things that appeal to each audience, and that's what I wanted to explore.
Yeah. What are some of the really famous or infamous examples of this?
Two recent examples were giant hits in London was Charlie and the Chocolate Factory and Chitty Chitty Bang Bang. Mm. Huge productions. They both played in the largest theater in London, played several years, were very successful. Each came over here, played in a large theater, ran a modest amount of time, lost a fortune. Now, these are both family musicals.
Right.
And they just could not survive.
That's surprising.
Now, in the case of one, the Chitty Chitty Bang Bang was an exact same production, you know, same design and everything. But it was so expensive, you know. They spent over $1 million just on that car, the famous flying car,
yeah.
Right. But they just could not sustain. It's very expensive to keep a musical running in New York, even more so than London. So that might have been part of it. But audiences just didn't keep coming. In the case of Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, they completely changed it. They changed the sets. They changed the direction. They made a terrible decision to have the children who go into the factory all played by adults.
Ooh.
Except for Charlie. Terrible decision. Was a horrible idea.
Yeah, that would kind of make it less enticing.
Yeah,
yeah.
They thought the audience wouldn't be so appalled at things happening to children. Well, everybody knew the movie. Everybody knew these obnoxious children, terrible things were going to happen to them. But for some reason, they thought if they were played by adults, it wouldn't be so upsetting. Well,
no, we want to see Augustus Gloop get what's coming to him.
We want to see the bread, you know.
That's right.
Going to the chocolate. So there's two examples of you know, they just didn't play.
So what are some that are just universally beloved? I think, as you pointed out, Gilbert and Sullivan and Andrew Lloyd Webber are two enduring examples that work in England and America.
Uh-huh. Billy Elliot, for example, is a show that just reached audiences in both cities. And that's unusual because it's a musical about British industrial history. You know, I mean, it on paper, it doesn't sound like a good idea for an American audience. This kid in a working class neighborhood, miners' strikes, Maggie Thatcher. You know, that was a bit of a risk to say, oh, yeah, we'll bring it to America. And Americans loved it. Now, it didn't run as long as London, but it still ran 4 years. Mm-hmm. So sometimes, you know, they surprise you and they say, wow, they loved it.
Do you think that's because Matilda. Billy Elliot is about a kid who doesn't fit in? And that's a universal theme.
Yes, yes. And the movie was more popular in Britain than it was in America, but something touched the audience in that musical. And even though they had the accent, you know, had American actors and they learned that middle England accent, it got right to the heart of things. There was no question about it. And in fact, it was a brilliant production, too. Matilda was another one. Matilda was a British, of course, it's based on a British story. But they made a movie of it, and if you recall, they turned it into American. It was all Americanized, the movie, but they went back to the British setting for the musical, and they wisely kept it British when they brought it to America. So they talked about telly, you know, instead of the television, and audiences accepted it and enjoyed Matilda, and that was very successful. Again, it ran longer in London, but it still ran very well and made a success.
Let me ask you, mm-hmm. Your book is out now, and of course we are all looking forward to new books. We're all reading a lot more, so I recommend everyone who loves theater pick up your book. And then also, let me ask you, how much are you looking forward to going back and seeing some live shows? I mean, the Alhambra Theater is continuing with live productions here in Jacksonville with some distancing and
with
precautions,
right?
But
right.
You know, we're all looking forward to that time when we can go to live events more regularly.
And I think of schools. You know, theater has become so important in schools, middle schools, high schools, and I think of students missing that opportunity. You know, the school play. There was a time where only the nerds were in the school play, but mm-hmm. not anymore.
Mm-hmm.
The school musical especially is such an important part of your fall or your spring semester, and that's gone. And I think a big hunk of your school experience, well, especially with not even going into a building, but I feel almost in some ways more for those kids that were in a production that got stopped, you know, suddenly last spring. And they're missing that experience because it's more than just seeing it. They were in it. They were part of it. So not that I go to see every school show, but my heart goes out to them even more so than the community theaters or, in the case of Alhambra, a professional theater, which is desperately trying to, you know, make ends meet by opening with restrictions because they have to pay the bills. But I miss all the summer theaters, you know.
Sure. And so I think in the meantime, people can enjoy their love of theater vicariously through your book. You are an incredibly prolific author, dozens of books and plays, and I want everyone to go pick up your newest. It's The Mikado to Matilda, British Musicals on the New York Stage, out this month. So, Thomas Hischak, good to talk to you, and congratulations.
Thank you.
Well, they are headquartered here in Jacksonville. One Call. They specialize in network management services in the workers' comp industry. This month, they announced the expansion of their CarePath program. It's called Respiratory Pathway. And they're working to help people suffering from lingering COVID-19 complications and symptoms, even after they test negative for the disease. This is more common than you might think. I learned more from Linda Colson. She's One Call's VP of Customer Experience. Take a listen. Hi, Linda. Thanks for being with us.
Hi, thank you.
Good to talk to you. So tell us what's happening over at One Call with this new program that you have launched. This is helping people who are suffering from lingering complications due to COVID-19. What's happening at your company?
So One Call has provided support for people that were respiratory compromised for about 30 years. And with the COVID pandemic that happened earlier this year, we identified that there were going to be people who started off as a COVID illness who, after the virus is negative, right, so they no longer have active COVID in their system, have a bunch of other lingering symptoms and complications that are impacting their individual recovery and return to work. And so One Call created we added to our respiratory pathway, which is it's a patient-centric model that aligns resources to help that person recover.
And that this respiratory pathway program, it helps people with respiratory illness, but it originally began in a different capacity, right? It dealt with on-the-job situations where people might have injured their lungs. Is that right?
You're absolutely right. So whether they had a burn injury to their lungs or an inhalation injury, so it could be a person who had been a miner, and so they had an issue from inhaling coal dust or silica issues or things like that. Our program originally supported those types of injuries, but there's other people that are, they're developing COVID-19 at work as well, whether they're in healthcare, whether they were an essential worker at a big box store or something like that, those individuals also need support as they recover. One of the things I think is really interesting is you see it on the news, and there'll be a video of a person that's being discharged from the hospital, and they've got the line of doctors and nurses in their masks, and people are clapping because this person had been very, very ill. They'd been NICU on a ventilator for weeks and weeks, mm-hmm. and now they get to discharge. So everybody's really happy. But the fact is, when that person is wheeled out of the hospital and they're put in their car and they go home, their recovery is far from over.
Right. Yes, it's sort of like we get excited about the wedding day, but we don't think about the marriage.
Exactly.
There's a long road ahead for many of these patients, right?
Yeah.
And this is a significant minority of people that have been diagnosed with COVID. They are battling long-term impacts from the disease. I know you're aware of this: acute respiratory distress syndrome, nerve impairment, kidney injury, heart issues, blood clots, ulcers, you name it. I mean, this is a whole body illness that has these horrible lingering complications for a significant number of people. So how did, within One Call, how did you repurpose your respiratory program and pivot to what we're dealing with now in this pandemic? How was that accomplished?
So One Call has provided services for the workers' compensation industry for many, many years, about 30 years. And within that, we've got a variety of products and services that help injured workers recover, whether it's durable medical equipment, so they need wheelchairs or walkers or prosthetics even, very, very different types of DME, home health services, diagnostic testing like CAT scans and MRIs, and physical therapy, right? People need to be able to regain their strength. People that have been on a ventilator may need help learning to swallow food again, right, because they've not taken nourishment orally for a long time. So we've taken these competencies that we had that served a whole host of other injuries and illnesses, and we brought them together because what we've seen is that Dependent upon what your unique situation is as you leave the hospital, your path may be completely different than mine. So some people are developing blood clots. It's a big issue with when it comes to the circulatory system. There have been horrible cases where a person was hospitalized on a vent, developed blood clots, and had an amputation as a result of it. I'm not sure if you heard about the Broadway actor, I think his name's Nick Cordero, who ultimately lost his battle. But while he was in the hospital and fighting COVID, he ended up with some of those complications.
Right, right. So this has applications for a variety of patients. Do you see your industry overall moving in this direction?
I honestly do, because if you think about all of the products and services that are needed for an individual's recovery, if all of those products and services are being just delivered by a variety of partners or vendors, the coordination of care effort around that recovery becomes very, very complex. And what the one-call model does is it allows a coordination approach to it. So we assign a care navigator to these files, and that care navigator is a partner with the patient, their medical team, one calls medical advisory board, and so we're making sure that the care that that person needs is appropriate for them based on their time. So one call focuses on getting injured workers the care they need when they need it. That's the core of everything that we do. And it just makes sense for these COVID patients as they're facing their recovery. So a person that needs a lot of DME, we can absolutely support that. A person, I saw a thing online where a gentleman had lost 50 pounds while he was in the hospital on a ventilator. He wasn't obese to begin with. He was very muscular. So that person is going to need a lot of physical therapy, right? How do you help rebuild your strength and your stamina? And so really it becomes a matter of what do they need and how do you coordinate that care so that the individuals get better.
Right. And so many people are in this situation, and it's going to be continuing for some time. Thank you, Linda, for sharing this with us. It's interesting to kind of peek behind the curtain of a major company headquartered here in Jacksonville and how you're helping COVID patients. Thanks so much.
I appreciate your time, Melissa. Thank you.
And in a moment, we speak with arts leader Ulysses Owens Jr., how he's reaching out to kids in this pandemic through the power of art education. A look at Don't Miss a Beat after this. A quick beat of a break, and we'll be right back. Don't go away. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9.
This message is brought to you by the Florida Division of Emergency Management, Florida Public Media, and this radio station.
This is Max Mayfield, former director of the National Hurricane Center. This hurricane season, you need to update your family preparedness plan so it includes COVID-19 preparations. So when a storm threatens, be ready to prepare your home and have your family hurricane kit ready. Include supplies for your pets and enough COVID-19 sanitizers, disinfectant wipes, and masks. Know your zone, know your home. For more information, go to floridastorm.org.
I'm Sid Hoskinson, and I host the news here. We had a really big storm, and we were on the air for 36 hours straight. Everybody jumps in where they're needed, whether it's on the air, whether it's running the control board. I guess that's the thing with hurricanes. We just all do what we have to do to get the information out to our listeners. This is WJCT News 89.9.
Gym owners say they've gotten a bad reputation during the pandemic.
This fear-based propaganda that gyms are a cesspool of coronavirus, which is just super not true.
But public health experts maintain gyms are risky. I'm Mary Louise Kelly. Can we work out safely during the COVID era? This afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Starting at 4 here on WJCT News 89.9.
The West has seen a lot of wildfires over the years, but nothing quite like what it's seeing now.
Not many people can say that they've battled in fires or been in fires or experienced fires of such size and magnitude.
We go to California and ask whether extreme weather could be America's new normal. That's next time on 1A from WAMU and NPR.
Today at 10 here on WJCT News 89.9.
Welcome back. Well, the pandemic has made arts organizations get creative in their outreach. That includes groups that work with kids. For more, I spoke with Ulysses Owens Jr., Artistic Director of Don't Miss a Beat. Ulysses, good to talk to you. Thanks for being with us.
Happy to be here.
So in this pandemic, most organizations are having to postpone in-person programs. You're still really busy, though. Tell us what you're up to with Don't Miss a Beat.
Sure. So we actually started with, right before, summer camp, a lot of our families were in need, and we were texting and staying in touch with them because we're very much a close-knit community. So the first thing that we did when we were still very much within the stay-at-home order was we were fortunate to have a donor that gave us gift certificates so that we could give food and groceries to families. So we were able to bless over, 75 families and really support them. And so then after that, we had a lot of meetings with the Kids Hope Alliance, and we were saying, what should we do? And so they said, hey, guys, we will support you during your summer camp. So we actually held our music and art summer camp intensive. We had it for 6 weeks. We had about 60 kids. We scaled down. We had a COVID specialist on campus, took temperatures every day. And thankfully, within 6 weeks, we had no outbreaks. And we also had a performance in the park. So it was really successful. And so now that we're going into the school year, we have actually decided to do a staggered approach to our after-school program. And what we wanted to do was really go back to sort of the virtual model for about 9 weeks. And so it's been really amazing. So we have two facets where we have our tutors coming in to Don't Miss a Beat, and they are talking to our kids virtually and assisting them with their Duval homework. And then after that period, then we have teachers coming in, and they're virtually teaching them the arts. So we have our strings class, horn, brass, woodwind, all of that. And we also have yoga and dance. And so it's been an adjustment. But one of the big things that Don't Miss a Beat is we're really wanting to stay engaged. And we want the kids to keep their spirits up and focus on an idea or on a concept. Otherwise, it becomes really hard given everything that's happening with the pandemic.
Yeah, so absolutely.
We keep going.
Yeah, got to keep going. And we need the arts now more than ever, all of us, but especially the kids that you work with. You're giving kids exposure to painting, music, theater.
Absolutely.
You're giving kids an avenue to express themselves artistically, and that makes a big difference in their academic and emotional development.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we have so many statistics that Don't Miss the Beat around, so many different metrics, right? One around a child having a consistent mentor, right? Then there's a child having a consistent focus on the arts and how that helps them mentally. And then there's all these statistics around if a child is, involved with the arts, their probability or statistics to even graduate high school and go to college. And so there's so many different studies that support our work. And I always say, my goal is not to find the next Mozart or Misty Copeland or Wynton Marsalis. My goal is for these kids to have consistent engagement and awareness of the arts, and that will enrich whatever their future goals are, because, again, it literally will help them to just be successful, go to college, and come back to their own community and give back to them, as opposed to kids who don't get embraced by the arts or don't embrace the arts. Many times they don't really get past high school, and they then start getting into a whole other set of statistics that are part of the whole, prison to pipeline system.
You are a local success story built around your embrace of the arts and your talents, and you have also helped a lot of other kids blossom and take wing through the arts. What are some of the success stories you like to share through Don't Miss a Beat?
Oh, man. I mean, you know, we have so many. I mean, like you said, I mean, my life, first of all, didn't come from a project like Don't Miss a Beat. I grew up sort of in church, but some of the kids that we've had, like, for instance, we have a child, Danielle Clark, who, when she got to me at 12 years old, Danielle just read poems. And I said, Danielle, I think your poetry could really extend to acting. And she was like, well, what's that? And so now Danielle is 17. She has gone to Douglas Anderson School of the Arts. She's in her senior year, and she's preparing to audition for Juilliard. And she's already gone up to New York and, you know, in the midst of has done a couple of independent studies. We have another student, Anjali Pacheco, who already at the age of 10 has one of the most amazing memories and has been memorizing August Wilson plays and, you know, plays from Lorraine Hansberry. We've also had, you know, students like Israel Haynes, who's an incredible student. That's one of my all-stars who, again, got to me. He just sung in church. Now he is at Douglas Anderson, and many of our kids have sang at NFL games. You know, most of our all-stars have even traveled to New York City. Because, you know, I still live in New York and Jacksonville, and I'm on staff at Juilliard. And they've gone to New York, and they studied at Juilliard, you know, with some of the teachers and staff, and then they performed there. And so, I mean, all of our students, in my mind, are success stories, one, because they are consistent and they're committed. And that is something that we really, really believe in teaching them, because it, again, will carry over long after Don't Miss a Beat is sort of a previous chapter in their lives.
In their lives. You're doing such great work, and it's good to check in with you, Ulysses Owens
Jr. Melissa.
He's artistic director of Don't Miss a Beat. Ulysses, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you, Melissa, for your support always.
You can check them out online, too. And that's our show. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. And thanks for listening, everybody. Our producer is Heather Schatz. Josh Torres is show director. Our station news director is Jessica Palumbo. And Bill Bortsfield is our digital editor. Keep those emails coming, meanwhile. We value your feedback. FirstCoastConnect@WJCT.org. And if you missed today's show, catch our rebroadcast on this radio station tonight at 8 o'clock, or our podcast will be up online later today at WJCT.org, along with a lot of news. I'm Melissa Ross. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. We're looking forward to connecting with you again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.